Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
As far as
Christian Wood,
he's our guy.
We still got
Ja'Shawn Tate.
Our goal is still to win a championship.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Being in a win now situation, that's great. I'm a win now coach.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Who is Mason Jones? Who is Mason Jones? Who is Mason Jones? That man dropped 24. What is up and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your very next order. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as the blog at ClutchCityCR. So the Rockets do ultimately fall 103-91 to the Spurs, and we're going to talk all about that game across probably the first two segments of this one. And then we'll spend segment three kind of talking about Rafael Stone, Steven Silas, and Victor Oladipo and their respective media availabilities from Sunday, you know, just kind of spaced out throughout the day. Rafael Stone earlier in the day, and then in the early afternoon, Victor Oladipo and Steven Silas spoke to media, kind of talk about some of their comments, and just kind of... I just want to share some thoughts about the general direction of the team now that they're kind of in this limbo mode of do they rebuild, do they not, are they competing this year, what's the deal, all of that. But we're going to focus on this Spurs game first. And I wanted to do the recap after the Spurs game, but I, you know, once it was announced that Stone and Oladipo would be speaking to the media Sunday, I was like, well, if I do the recap right after the Spurs game, I'm not going to be on the pod again until after the Bulls game on Monday night. And I was like, you know what, I'll just delay and then we'll split this kind of recap pod instead of it just being about the Spurs game. Now I have a chance to talk about all of it together. So first things first, with this Spurs game, Mason Jones had himself a night, from undrafted to starting in an NBA game and pouring in 24 points, 6 of 8 shooting from behind the arc in 35 minutes played, 8 of 12 shooting overall, had 6 boards, 4 assists, did have 6 turnovers, but he was basically the starting point guard in the absence of Sterling Brown, and Ja'Shawn Tate had a bit of, you know, had some struggles in this game. The Spurs looked like they game planned a lot better for him in this one. So the Rockets were without DeMarcus Cousins and Sterling Brown in this one, two guys that were available for the first Spurs game, giving them a total of 9 players. And there was actually even a question rolling into this one, were they going to have enough guys? But eventually they got the trade to clear with the Nets, and Rodion Krux was actually available. So he played 21 minutes in this one, literally like roll, you know, got off the plane and just jumped straight into a Rockets jersey and got thrown on the court. And, you know, hey, here are your teammates, have fun. Did have a, you know, struggled a bit in this game for Krux, but we'll talk more about that in a second. But Mason Jones had a really stellar night. And that's not to say that there aren't areas of his game that definitely need some improvement. My biggest thing that I'm seeing with him is, again, it's that lack of athleticism and, you know, him actually being able to create space against opposing players. Now, granted, he did have 24 points in this one, so it's weird to be nitpicking on this. Again, 6 of 8 shooting from downtown. But at the same time, there's so many opportunities where for a shooter like him, if he could create a bit more space, there's no reason why he shouldn't have had 20 shot attempts in this game, because he was the only rocket that was hitting with any regularity from behind the arc, it seems. I mean, you go down the line. I take that back. Ben McLemore had a pretty solid game, but then the rest of the team largely struggled. So Ben McLemore was 4 of 7 shooting from behind the arc. So combined, they were 10 of 15, which means the rest of the team was just a lowly 2 for 17 from behind the arc. So those two guys held down the fort as far as three-point shooting, but then everybody else just couldn't hit anything. PJ Tucker, 0 of 6, Tate, 0 of 1, Wood, 1 of 3, Kuroks was 0 of 4, and then Nwaba was 1 of 3. KJ Martin Jr. didn't even attempt a single three-pointer. But with Mason Jones, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do with him moving forward when you get some legitimate ball handlers back in John Wall, in Eric Gordon, and Victor Oladipo, to see where you can plug and play Mason Jones, because he's got such a nice shot that I almost wonder if he would thrive better if you don't play him as a guard and maybe you line him up as a small forward, maybe giving him a bit more of a speed advantage against some of the other threes that would have to guard him. But, you know, with a guy like that, it'd be interesting to see them actually running some set plays for him to get him kind of, you know, coming off some screens and get him some wide open threes. Because when he was able to release the ball, one, he was shooting the ball from like 26, 27 feet with regularity in this game. And it was so damn impressive. It's just great to see a rookie like Mason Jones, again, from undrafted to starting in an NBA game and putting in 24 points. Coach Silas saying that, you know, by the end of the game, Jones was cramping up because he hadn't played 35 minutes in a game in a while. So Silas was all smiles talking. Well, Silas is all smiles all the time in the post James Harden era. But, Jones, you know, I feel great for him, you know, for a rookie to be able to go out and do that. It's a big moment for him, and it shows that he is really capable, and that maybe people should reconsider, doubting somebody because of their confidence in the draft. So for those of you that don't know, Mason Jones's stock fell in the draft because he was, in player interviews, throughout the draft process, was telling teams that he felt like he was the best player in the draft. And I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. That's just confidence. So, you know, Mason Jones was confident as all hell, and because of that, his draft stock plummeted, and that's how the Rockets were able to scoop him up. So he could be a total steal, alongside, again, Jayshon Tate and Christian Wood, Rafael Stone, and the Rockets brass doing their due diligence and finding these guys who are absolute diamonds in the rough. And it'll be great to see how he develops and how he moves along under Stephen Silas. So there's, and then everybody else from this game. Christian Wood had a big night, 24 points, 18 rebounds, a new career high, although I'm sure that's not going to last very long for C. Wood, considering how he rebounds at such an elite rate. Did have 6 offensive rebounds in this one. Really aggressive on the offensive glass. Just 9 of 20 shooting overall. Would like to see a little bit better efficiency there from him. But maybe we can attribute that to, the high usage rate. That's something I've touched base on, is that's an adjustment that he's going to have to get used to being the focal point in the offense on a nightly basis. That'll, put some wear and tear on his body. So, over the course of a 48-minute game, he needs to not taper off, and it needs to be kind of reserve himself at points throughout the game, not go, 110% for the first two quarters and have an empty gas tank for the last two quarters. Ben McLemore had a night. He had his season high for the Rockets, 21 points. His career high as a Houston Rocket is 28 points that he set last season against Toronto in that game where the Raptors were really aggressively trapping James Harden every single possession. And then his career high is 31 points. But he was 7 of 14 shooting overall, 4 of 7 from behind the arc. Really nice to see Benny Mack get back into it. So the Rockets had 3 players score over 20 points each, but then the rest of the team only combined for 22 points. So, there were stretches of this game where finding offense was really, really difficult for these guys, and there were definitely some points where not having a legitimate point guard was absolutely hurting them. Looking at their turnovers, that was a big one from this game and something I want to talk about. I want to talk about the turnovers and the defense actually coming up here in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Let's talk protein bars for a second. When's the last time you had a protein bar, if ever, that you bit into and you were like, this is actually delicious? If the answer is no, you can change that with Built Bar, because the thing about these, let me tell you the secret about these protein bars, right? They're not actually protein bars. They're basically candy bars that are jam-packed with protein. They're soft, they're easy to chew, they're covered in 100% delicious chocolate. They come in amazing different flavors. There's the 12 OG flavors, some of those. They've got banana bread, salted caramel, double chocolate, my personal favorite. They've got the 6 new flavors that they just rolled out not long ago. They've got the carrot cake, apple almond crisp, cookies and cream. Really, you just can't go wrong down their entire menu of flavors. And every single one of these bars, they've got, you know, anywhere from 17 to 20 grams of protein. They're perfect whether you're trying to lose weight or just maintain weight. They're low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Amazing if you're on a keto diet. And you can check them out. Just go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your very next order. So again, that's promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Talking about the Rockets' 103-91 loss against the Spurs. Look, it would have been really great for the Rockets to win this game, but that's just, you know, sometimes that's just not the way the dice rolls with these younger groups of guys. Again, the offense largely struggled in that second half. They got off to a really good start. First quarter, they won the quarter 30-21. Second quarter, they kind of fizzled a little bit. They lost the quarter 29-23. Third quarter, they lost the quarter 25-19. And then in the fourth quarter, again, they posted 19 points to the Spurs, 28 points. So they only scored 38 points in the half. Really, really tough offensive outing, especially for stretches in those third and fourth quarters. Really hard for them to come by any way to score the ball. And that's, you know, could be, it was kind of an adjustment from the Spurs. They, you know, their defense was a lot better in this one compared to the first meeting between these two teams. It felt like they game planned a lot better for Jayshon Tate, who was largely shut down in this game. Regrettably, he was a team high plus 17 in the first matchup against the Spurs, had the 10 assists, was facilitating at a high rate, was getting what he wanted right at the rim. In this game, he was the Rockets' team worst, minus 24, only 7 points, 2 of 11 shooting, missed his only 3-point attempt, had 5 assists, but also had 2 turnovers. Just not an over, you know, again, overall, they did a much better job containing Jayshon Tate, and a large part of it was they know he's a non-shooter. So, you know, in the first game, they made the mistake of, you know, creeping up on him defensively and giving him that space to then get going downhill and drive to the rim and be able to finish at a high rate. In this one, they just backed off of him, and he's a reluctant shooter. He only attempted 1-3 in this game. The only guy who's more of a reluctant shooter on this roster than Jayshon Tate might be KJ Martin Jr. But, you know, that was just credit to the Spurs and Popovich for making that adjustment and implementing it the very next game. And that's what's really cool about these little mini series between teams, because it allows coaches and players the opportunities to adjust going into the second game, to make those adjustments, to go back and look at film. It's like a mini playoff series, really. And, you know, this is going to be a great test for Steven Silas moving forward throughout this really odd season. Is, okay, he's going to, you know, in the first game, whether they win or lose, you know, if they win, great. You know, what adjustments is the opposing coach going to make, and how are you going to counter those adjustments? You know, what did you see in the film? And then vice versa, if you lose the first game of a back-to-back meetup with a team, then what adjustments does Silas put in the second game to try and make things a little bit better, to try and, you know, pick up the W instead of losing the second game? So I'm a big fan of these little mini series. They're very, very cool from a chess match standpoint. Now the Spurs, DeRozan, after, you know, struggling in that first game between these two teams, posted 24 points in this one, 9 of 25 shooting, so some pretty terrible efficiency for him. Did go 6 of 6 at the line, 7 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, and a block. But really, the turning point in this game, and again, this is just you know, the Rockets defense wasn't bad in this game, but their transition defense, again, needs work. And a large part of that, and this is something I will always harp on, is those live ball turnovers. So the Rockets had 23 turnovers in this game, leading to 31 Spurs points. I mean, it's really hard to overcome a turnover deficit that large compared to the Spurs, who only had 12 turnovers to the tune of 12 Rockets points. So when you're turning the ball over at a high rate, it forces you to then get in transition and play transition defense, which this team, you know, most teams in the league play better half-court defense than they do transition defense. When you're able to get your defense set and able to, you know, throw different looks at the opposing team, makes you a better defensive ball club. But you know, when you're turning the ball over and then having to scramble in transition to get back and get matched up with whoever you're supposed to be guarding, all that, there's mistakes that are going to happen, miscommunications, miscues, all that stuff. And that's exactly what happened in this one. So the turnovers were a pretty big issue. But then the free throw shooting was another one. So another really bad free throw shooting performance for this Rockets team. Just 63% at the line, 17 of 27. So they hung 10 points at the free throw line in this one. And free throw shooting was an issue in last game, too. Now, they were still able to escape with the W thanks to the really stellar play of Christian Wood and Jayshon Tate down the stretch, as well as PJ Tucker's defense down the stretch. But, you know, when you're looking at a game that was as close as this one was, all the way up until about the 5-minute mark of the fourth quarter, those free throws would have made a huge difference down the line of this game. Even if you were shooting, say, 80% as opposed to 63%, would have looked a lot better. Now, the turning point in this game was, and actually, before I get to that turning point, I do want to say the Rockets did give a lot of defensive looks. So they did have kind of their base defense. They had some zone. They were doing some trapping. They were blitzing screens. They were doing a lot defensively in their half court sets. That was really interesting, and it showed. And then Stephen Silas spoke after the game and basically said, "Yeah, we're kind of expanding upon some of the defensive sets and principles that I've, you know, been instilling." And it's cool to see. It's cool to see different looks. I was really surprised when we saw the 2-3 zone that the Rockets threw out there to really force the Spurs to shoot the ball. Because they started taking away the driving lanes, and it made sense. I mean, the Spurs were only 5 of 24 from behind the arc for the game, just a hair over 20% shooting. Both teams really struggled to shoot the ball. Spurs were 40% from the floor after the game. Rockets were just 36.9% after the game. I mean, just both teams really struggling to find any form of offense. Until really the turning point, which was DeJounte Murray went on a personal 7-0 run, unfortunately, right at about the, where was it? There we go. Yeah, right with a little over 4 minutes to go at 4:19 left in the fourth quarter, DeJounte Murray hit a three-pointer, and then he comes back down. He hits a pull-up jump shot, pushing the lead to 95-85, and then he comes back down and has a dunk off of a Mason Jones turnover. So what did I say? Turnovers, they're backbreakers, and that pushed the score up to 97-85. And that was pretty much it. I mean, the Rockets went on to only score 6 more points the rest of the way. Spurs, same thing, 6 more points. But that little run, that personal 7-0 run by DeJounte Murray, at the tail end of the fourth, that was the turning point of the game. It, you know, the Rockets were very much in the game up until that point. I mean, it was 87-83 with 6 minutes to go, and the Rockets just could not find offense. You know, the next possession down, Keldon Johnson hit a three. I mean, it was, the game was right there for the taking, very similar to the first game between these two teams. But that's what's going to happen with a bunch of young guys on the roster and not having a de facto person who is going to step up and be the guy at the tail end of the game. And that's where getting John Wall back, getting Victor Oladipo, you know, into the lineup and getting him acclimated to what's going on, getting Eric Gordon back, Cousins, you know, for a roster that was down five starting quality players, they put up a hell of an effort. Like, I'm not upset by this loss, and there's obviously areas to improve upon from this game, But overall, you know, what you see out of the, what you got to see out of these guys in this one bodes well. It's exciting and it's promising. Now, if I did have to point out a couple problem areas, David Nwaba's shooting continues to be a bit of an issue. Even less so from the 3-point line. It's just, you know, when he was 2 of 8 shooting overall in this one. So, you know, David Nwaba needs to work on that 3-point shot. He's got to be a reliable threat from three, because again, having him out there not willing to shoot the ball, it kind of clogs some other things up. So, you know, I'd like to see a little bit more out of him. And then PJ Tucker, you know, Tucker went from, he has these nights where he's just completely on fire and then just completely ice cold. And it's the inconsistency that really hurts, because he brings you what he brings you defensively. You know, he secured 9 rebounds in this one. He had 2 assists. He had a steal. He had 2 blocks. But he only had 4 points on 1 of 9 shooting. Missed a couple bunnies at the rim. Missed all 6 of his threes. Just a really, really tough night for PJ Tucker. And at what point, like, I guess at what point, if you're Steven Silas, do you look at what a player is bringing you offensively versus defensively and you say, yeah, the defense isn't outweighing this, like, porous offensive performance? Because I don't know what that point is. Does Steven Silas, you know, value above all else what PJ Tucker provides as the anchor defensively? Maybe. But, you know, another guy like David Nwaba, maybe not as much. I really don't know where that cutoff point is for Steven Silas, and whether, you know, he would even consider at any point throughout a game. Again, this one's a little bit difficult because you only have 8 guys available, so it's not like you can just dig deeper into the bench and say, hey, you know, we're gonna try out Sterling Brown, or we're gonna try out Daniel House, or any of that, right? You don't have half your lineup in this one, so you pretty much had to roll with PJ Tucker. But legitimately, further down the line, once the entire lineup is available, at what point do you pull a player if they just don't have it offensively, even if they are a defensive specialist like PJ Tucker, or, you know, a Jayshon Tate, or a David Nwaba, you know, guys who, yeah, they bring their all defensively. They're going to give you that hustle, that effort. They might get you some stops here and there. But if they're just a complete black hole offensively, when do you pull them? So that'll be interesting to see how Silas utilizes all of that moving forward. But again, excited about this game. It really, you know, to see Mason Jones come out and have this strong game, to have Ben McLemore have a good bounce back game after, you know, kind of struggling in that first Spurs matchup. Christian Wood continues to be impressive and continues to improve. Got to work on his free throw shooting, though. Got to work on his efficiency a little bit. It's fun, you know, watching these young guys go out there and have these really strong games. And again, it'd be one thing if it was a blowout from the jump, but it wasn't. It was a close competitive game all the way up until the 4-minute mark. And maybe a couple things break a little bit differently. Maybe the Rockets hit a couple of those threes. Even if PJ Tucker just goes 33% in this game, it's a completely different look, you know, as far as momentum and missing some of those threes, and then the Spurs getting out in transition, all that stuff. So that's where we're going to leave the recap section for this game off at. And then we're going to dive into here in just a moment the media availabilities from Rafael Stone, Steven Silas, Victor Oladipo, all that good stuff in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at betonline.ag. NFL regular season is finishing up and the playoffs are right around the corner. NBA season is in full swing with great slates of games every single night. And there is only one place that has you covered and one place that we here at Locked On Rockets trust, and that is betonline.ag. You can sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use our promo code LOCKEDON, that's LOCKEDON, for your very own 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. Look, there's great games in the NFL to throw some money on. There's great games every single night in the NBA. Even, look, the Rockets are actually -2 point favorites against the Bulls Monday night, so maybe you want to throw some money on that one. But you can, you know, there's no reason to sit on the sidelines anymore, because you've got BetOnline.ag at your fingertips, so you can get in on the action. And don't forget to use our promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Getting ready to jump into what Rafael Stone, Stephen Silas, and Victor Oladipo talked about to the media. And in fact, rather than me reiterate, I'm actually going to play back some of what Rafael Stone talked about. So we'll dive into that right now.
I don't think it's kind of appropriate to talk about the other deals. I will say what's super exciting about this deal is it gives us flexibility. In the NBA, picks, especially high picks, are the best currency. Everybody likes them. Everybody values them. So that was great organizationally. It gave us flexibility to do different types of deals as they come up this year, next year, whatever. And then we were able to get Victor Oladipo as part of it, along with Rhodey and Dante, but Victor's a guy we're really excited about. And, I think he's excited to be here and we think he's very talented. And so that was not insignificant from our perspective.
This was kind of a standout quote to me because I think a lot of people are taken aback at the fact that the Rockets didn't get a young cornerstone type player back in this James Harden deal. And I'll admit, I was a bit taken aback as well at first. But the more that I've sat with it, the more that I realize that this ultimate flexibility, as Rafael Stone mentions, is probably the best route for this organization moving forward, because you look at the options that were out there, you know, reasonably. And so Ben Simmons being the biggest what if, Tyler Harrow earlier on when Miami was involved, to whatever extent, you know, a possible Jaylen Brown or Pascal Siakam deal might have happened. Essentially, Rafael Stone looks at those guys, those players, and basically didn't think that their ceiling or their potential ceiling was as valuable as the flexibility of the picks. And that's not a hard sell. I mean, you know, looking at all those guys, Ben Simmons is the best of that bunch, and he's been off to a pretty rough start this season. You know, can you reasonably say that Ben Simmons could be the best player on a championship team? Probably not. You know, he could be the second best player. He could be a good piece of a championship team. But if he is your peak, if he's your top dog on a championship team, it's probably not a championship team. So I think that his ultimate goal with these picks, right, you know, referring to them as currency here is key, thinking that, you know, the picks, until they convey, until you actually draft a player with those picks, the idea of a first round pick is such a liquid asset in the NBA. People love those first round picks. It, like you said, it's the best currency. So moving forward from this point, with the Rockets pick situation, the fact that they do not own their own pick this season, there's no reason to tank this season, essentially, because if you tank, you only have a chance to get your pick back. It's top four protected, so you'd have to land in the top four to hang on to your pick and not have it swapped to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So competing this season seems like the best case scenario moving forward, which again, I drew the comparison that this team is going to be very similar to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So what they can do is they can compete hard this season. They can try and recoup some of the value of John Wall, make Victor Oladipo look really, really good, maybe try and flip him by the trade deadline for something else. And then this summer, that's when they can wheel and deal and start making some moves. If John Wall has played at an all-star level this season, then there's going to be a team out there that would be interested in trading for John Wall, very similar to how the Phoenix Suns traded for Chris Paul and gave up a draft pick to do it. So this is going to be an interesting turn of events in the future, because then the Rockets do own their 2022 and 2023 draft picks, so those would be the years that if this team is intent on doing a full-blown rebuild and tanking to be at the top of the draft, those would be the 2 years to do it. So looking at how this team is presently constructed, essentially, I think that's probably the best-case scenario moving forward, because if you try the way that they did it before during the post-T-Mac Yao era, where you remain relatively competitive, but you're stuck kind of drafting at the tail end of the lottery, kind of competing for the playoffs every year. They've got enough talent on the roster to do that consistently, especially if they decide they want to try and keep Victor Oladipo for the long term. But one of my issues is the way contracts are structured in the NBA, Victor Oladipo wants a max level deal. The Pacers, I think, tried to offer him something like $25 million a year, and he turned it down as an extension. So that's painful because Victor Oladipo is not a player worth north of $30 million a year. He's just not. And that's what I don't like about NBA contract structures is at the end of the day, you're going to get screwed into having to pay whoever your best guys are, even if they're not necessarily worth those contracts, because otherwise you lose them in free agency and you lose them for nothing. So it's better to just pay the players their money up front and then try and find a home for them later on if you need to. But then you've got certain guys that are making disproportionately way more money than they should be, compared to other players of similar caliber across the league. So that's kind of painful there. And it'll be interesting to see what they ultimately do with Victor Oladipo. Now for Vic, when he was doing his press conference, he's saying all the right things. He's saying he's here to compete at a high level. He's excited to play with John Wall. Somebody on Twitter threw out the nickname Walladipo. I can't remember who did that, so credit where credit's due. I can't take original credit for that, but I love that Walladipo nickname for that backcourt. It's going to be fun watching those two guys play together for however long it does happen. Now, Victor will be playing against the Bulls Monday night in Chicago. That's going to be huge because right now, Eric Gordon and DeMarcus Cousins are both probable. Sterling Brown is questionable. And then John Wall is still out with a minor knee injury. So, but they don't think it's anything with Wall specifically. They don't think it's anything big, you know, long-term issue for his knee. Just they're just being overly cautious. That's all. And, you know, given the state of the team and kind of the past week or so, it's not the end of the world to, you know, drop a few games here and there and, you know, have John Wall sit out to make sure that he's ultimately 100%, even if it's just a minor type of injury. That's kind of the right play, in my opinion. But with this team, once they get everybody back and together, there's not a reason that this team isn't pushing for at least a play-in spot or possibly even one of the lower seeds somewhere in like that 6-8 range. Again, very similar to what OKC did last season. And the cool thing about this James Harden deal, which was ultimately they originally constructed it as a three-team deal and they were going to do the Indiana Victor Oladipo trade separately to generate a $15 million, give or take, traded player exception to be able to use for the next year. Unfortunately, because of an issue in Caris LeVert's physical, which actually wound up being a kidney issue, if I believe I'm remembering it correctly, which it's lucky that they caught it because that could have been a big issue. So prayers up for Caris LeVert. But with the way that the trade got restructured, the Rockets now have a TPE a little over, it's like $10.5 million. So the ways that they can use that TPE, right, it cannot be aggregated. You can't, you know, pair a TPE with, you know, somebody else who's making $10 million and bring back a $20 million player. But what they can do is they can just completely absorb up to that $10.5 million contract from another team. So what the way that these TPEs can be used and the way that we've seen Sam Presti use them for the Thunder is absorbing bad contracts that the league doesn't want. So when you're in full rebuild mode, it doesn't matter who's out there on the court. Obviously, you want to get the young guys their proper reps, but what you do is you go out to you canvass the NBA landscape, and Rafael Stone's going to look around and try and find a team or two that have some really bad contracts that they'd really like to offload. And Rafael Stone says, "Hey, I'll take that two-three year deal into my cap space, into this TPE, and you just float me a first rounder, you know, somewhere down the line, or you know, float me a pair of second rounders or something like that." And that's what you do, is because teams want to, you know, whether there's other teams out there that are trying to, you know, cut down on their tax, you know, their tax burden, try and offload a really bad contract that they had to take on from another deal, maybe a bad decision they made, whatever. That's the NBA economy at work, and that's where the Rockets are at right now, is they are essentially in asset accumulation mode. So it's not quite a fire sale just yet because they haven't created enough buzz around John Wall and Oladipo, and hopefully Eric Gordon can play himself back into a tradable fashion. But the goal right now for this team is be competitive, play hard every night, let the young guys develop, but at the same time, let the mainstays of this team, the John Walls, the Victor Oladipos, the Eric Gordons, let them play themselves up in trade value so that either at the deadline or this offseason, Rafael Stone has leverage to then be able to move those guys to other teams, bring back assets, and then really gear up for a full-scale rebuild. Because you've got Christian Wood and Jayshon Tate under wraps for the next 3 years, which means at the end of their contracts, the Rockets are going to have their bird rights. So the Rockets are going to be able to offer them more money than any other team in the league. So, and depending on how Christian Wood develops, you know, because we can make the jokes about Jayshon Tate being, you know, the next Draymond Green and stuff, and I don't really think they're jokes. I think it's very possible that he follows a similar progression based on the skill set that we've seen out of him so far. But with Christian Wood, if he continues to play at an all-star level, I wouldn't put it past him to just sign another three-year deal when he's, you know, 27, and you know, he could very well bet on himself and then want to re-up for a full-blown max at 30 years old and be able to get the 10-year-plus max. But that'll be, and again, how that plays out is interesting, but the Rockets will have the ultimate leverage, which is they'll be able to offer more money and more years than any other team out there to both of those guys. So if Jayshon Tate and Christian Wood progress how everybody hopes that they will, then those are going to be two starting quality players that are going to be in your rotation further down the line. So you hit on some draft picks, or potentially you can package a bunch of those draft picks to trade for a star, a legit star further down the line. But it all circles back to flexibility. The Rockets aren't locked in to a Ben Simmons on a five-year deal where they're suddenly pressured into, okay, now we somehow have to, on the fly, remake and rebuild a championship contender centered around Ben Simmons and Christian Wood. That's not the situation now. The situation is, okay, we've got a young, exciting coach in Steven Silas. We're going to see how he develops these young, exciting players. And we've got the most liquid trade asset possible in all these future firsts and pick swaps. And we're going to, you know, somewhere down the line, utilize those to either hit on players in the draft or package, a bunch of them together to make a move for a legitimate star to catapult the team back into contention. And, you know, being able to do that, having that flexibility is what looks like, you know, to Rafael Stone, it looks like that is the best way to operate this franchise moving forward. I agree with the trade. Again, I've kind of, you know, talked myself into it. But even if the Rockets had pulled back in, Jaylen Brown or a Pascal Siakam, right? Those guys are already on big deals. So, you know, you're looking at those guys and suddenly you're capped out to hell with those guys. And are those guys true blue? Can they be the best player on a championship team? And I don't know that you can't reasonably say yes is the problem. Can Christian Wood be the best player on a championship team? We don't know yet. He looks talented as all hell, but can he be the best guy on a championship team? To be determined. And the hope would be yes. The hope would be that he develops into an Anthony Davis-esque type player who can be the best guy on a championship team, and you put a few pieces around him and we see where this team can go. But at the worst, he can be the second or third best player on a championship team for sure. So the Rockets already have one piece of the puzzle solved with Christian Wood. They just need to give him time to, you know, beef up a little bit in the weight room, develop his game a little bit more, work on the defensive side of things a little bit. But he'll be hitting his prime in 2 or 3 years, and then the Rockets re-up on him, give him a fresh new contract. He'll be making the most money he's ever made in his career. And hopefully he'll be able to sail a Rocket for a long, long time on the route to contention. But Christian Wood came here to win. He didn't come here to tank. He didn't come here to not play competitive basketball. So maybe the Rockets don't tank. Maybe they don't decide to go the tanking route. Maybe they decide to remain as competitive as possible throughout this rebuild. And they utilize the draft picks to make moves elsewhere rather than actually trying to bottom out and, you know, shoot for Chet Holmgren or Cade Cunningham or Imani Bates down the line, you know, rather than shooting for one of those guys and trying to find a star in the draft. Maybe they just look around at the stars that are actively and currently developing in the league and they decide they want to pull the trigger on a trade similar to what Daryl Morey did back in 2012 and bringing in James Harden and then developing that talent from a sixth man of the year candidate into a top five, top three player in the NBA. Now, obviously, you can't predict that. I don't think even Daryl Morey could have predicted that James Harden would become a perennial top three player in the league. But the blueprint is still there to take those picks, to make a move rather than focusing on drafting, and to make a move to bring in an established player rather than an unknown commodity that you don't know how he's going to pan out in the actual NBA environment. So I think that's all I've got for today. Obviously, a lot of different angles to tackle with this moving forward, a lot of different stuff that I still haven't hit on. Definitely want to dive into the details of the Rockets draft pick situation moving forward because it is kind of convoluted. I'll have to dedicate probably an entire episode to breaking that down and what that means. So many different areas to talk about, but the Rockets are playing the Bulls next. It's going to be a fun game. The Bulls just thumped the Dallas Mavericks Sunday night, so hopefully the Rockets aren't the next on the Bulls' target list. But it'll be a fun game, seeing Victor Oladipo for the first time in a Rockets jersey, getting Eric Gordon and DeMarcus Cousins back into the lineup, seeing how Silas balances his veterans with these young players who can obviously hoop, you know, seeing what Mason Jones does moving forward. It's all going to be fun. And I'm excited to see it all play out. But for today's episode, that's going to be where we wrap things up. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.